Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Holy shit, that fade was amazing.
You know what time it is.
Filling in for my co-host Eddie Pence is Mr. Dave Jensen. Dave, your fade.
You're back.
You're setting the whole show up to be kick-ass just based on
Buddy,
your fade.
Masterful fade, if I do say myself.
I gotta say, it was like you were manning the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Just like, you had the whole ship under control.
In 4 parsecs.
I was a little nervous, because you haven't,
run
been here
fades.
Since January.
Yeah, I know.
So,
I know.
But you had this down. You were ready.
What do you think I've been doing this whole time?
You've been working on fades?
Yeah.
You know what? You were good last time, but you're going to Top Gun for fades now, dude. No monkeying around, dude. How was your week, man? I haven't seen you in a while, so.
It's been a minute.
How have your months been?
The months have been okay. It was my birthday last week.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Dude,
thank
I should
you.
Be taking you out to dinner.
Hey.
I'll take you out to dinner this week.
14 years old.
You look great for 14, dude.
Thank you. Well.
So what did you do? Did you do anything crazy?
Nah, a very chill birthday down in San Diego.
You lie. You lie.
It was hiking and biking and playing music.
Did you mean to rhyme?
Yeah, I did.
You're like hiking and biking and...
Not that kind of bike either. No Harleys here. I'm talking about a classic 1920s huge wheel and front bicycle.
Oops, my bike doesn't do that. So you went hiking and biking.
Hiking, biking, had some good food.
That's
and,
nice.
Played a lot of music.
Did you have some good weather to enjoy in San
Great
Diego?
Great weather, yeah.
So you weren't biking in the rain?
No, yeah. Biking on a pleasant sunny day around a little island and then hopped off when the wind was right and flew my kite for a minute.
Dude,
and,
you brought a kite with you?
I always bring a kite with
dude,
me, man.
Dude, kites are not easy to fly. Like, can you, are you actually good at it?
I've got a two-line stunt kite, dude. I'm a bit of a wind jock.
You could say a nerd. Yeah,
you might say.
I'm just kidding.
I make that thing dance. I make it dance up there.
It's your wind dancer?
Yeah.
That's impressive. How did you get good at flying kites? Because I'm terrible at it. Mine would never take off.
I was like when I was 18, when I first moved to L.A.
And we're all out of time.
Just kidding. Take us back.
No, just kidding.
And we're out of time. Join us next time when we resume our enthralling kite conversation.
What's the secret power behind your kite?
You make your own wind. Only way you get ahead in this world.
No, so really, how did you get good at that?
Okay,
I'm going to let you have your time.
I just learned, I really enjoyed a single line, and then...
I had water in my mouth, so I couldn't even get the laugh.
Oh, it's all good.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I wondered, is there more? And there is. There's 2- and 4-line kites. And I learned the basics of a 2-line, so you learn how to do like all the stunts and the loops and stuff like that.
Wow, so you can do some free balling shit.
I can do some shit, dude. Just last week, I counted off 21 loops before.
You did 21 loops?
And then I did 21 back the other way, and my record's like 25. Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I honestly am impressed. I think our studio audience is too, seriously.
Well, I live to shatter expectations.
So, 21 loops.
Yeah.
Is that a record for you, or is that just average?
Like, 25 is my record.
Oh, so you hit 21, you're like,
it's child's play. But with the right winds, when I can really get it going, I can do some crazy.
You're like, 21's good enough. These people don't need to see anymore.
25 is punch a baby good.
Did you just do a, you just totally did a 1-2 combo with your soundboard? Yeah. You've been working on this stuff. Are you trying to make me look bad? Jeez.
Of course. I'm trying to enhance. I'm trying to make my own wind.
You know, this radio show misses you, Dave. It's always good to have you on. And
I missed it.
And, you know, we really appreciate it. We've got some amazing music. Dude, what'd you... Dude. That's and I'm on my show tonight alone. I'm just kidding. No, it's really great to, you know, hear all the things that you've been doing and that you've aged another year like the rest of us.
Yeah, still happens. Yeah.
And you're still kind of the class clown. And I like that we're still friends. And
me too.
You may get asked back for a third time.
That would be nice.
Now, you did your first show in January. You must have been like, wait, why isn't he not calling me?
I've been sitting by the phone literally this whole time.
You're like, dude, I thought
I could take it with me, but I still leave it at home and sit by it just for.
And you know what? I sent you a text and you didn't answer it right away. I was like, he must be mad at me that I didn't call him earlier. Yeah,
just didn't want to come off too eager.
You wanted to make it look like you had other shit going on. Yeah,
like, so many podcasts that day.
But lo and behold, you did not.
So. No, I did not. So I said, full steam ahead. Let's charge into this.
too funny. My God. This show hasn't even gotten off, you know, up off the ground. And we're already hooting and hollering, dude.
Have you talked about your dog?
Oh, dude,
on the
Otis,
show, do they know?
They know about the dog. You just met Otis. How is it? So Otis is always like a new. He's not here in the studio audience.
Yeah.
But Otis is like, dude, he's a forever an adventure for me, and man, he's the shit.
Yeah.
And how was your experience meeting Otis tonight?
He was. He lived up to the pics.
He did.
That looks like a super cute dog,
dude.
Let's verify this.
And he's got personality.
He's got personality.
Like all dogs have personality, but he's mellower. He's like...
He's mellower and he's sweet.
Yes.
He's a real sweet dog.
And
he's
untied your shoelaces.
A couple times.
Yeah. You tried training him. That's why. He's like,
hey,
a bit of the foo.
Yeah, I think with enough time, he would have tied them together and gotten me to run somewhere and...
He would have... The old tomfoolery.
He's a practical joker.
Yeah, no, he is a total adventure, and man, he gets cuter and cuter and bigger every day, dude.
Yep.
He's like super, he's like almost 2-3 times the size that he was when we first got him, so he is just lighting up my life, and he's so funny. He's just, he behaves when there's food around, misbehaves when there's not. He's just like one of those guys, but.
Does he have any special, like, Mogwai considerations? You can't feed him after midnight, or you can't, get water on him, anything like that?
You can feed him after midnight. He may shit the bed. But other than that, he's pretty good to go. No, he's actually a really good dog. And a couple little puppy accidents here and there. But, you know, I've seen you have accidents. So
yeah, sure.
Nothing out of the
norm. I have puppy accidents myself from time to time.
That happens at 14. I mean, that's just the way
it goes.
Still
figuring things out, man.
So how's your dog?
He's great, dude. He's 10 years young.
Man, and, 70 years old.
Yeah. Well, and his breed lives longer than most, so he's still got some years, buddy. He's still going, but going strong and just...
Any gray hairs?
Yeah.
That's, you know,
starting to get, a little bit whiter, starting to get a little and, but man, he's as sweet as ever. And
this turned into doggy hour real quick.
Welcome to Dog Talk. We don't shy away from the questions you really want to know.
Bitches and bitches and more bitches.
Rule number one, they'll lick just about anything with peanut butter on it.
Dude, I can't even take a sip of water with you around. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, I think our special guest has arrived, jazz extraordinaire pianist Will Harrington. Say hello, Will. How are you?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
He's like, you guys are really annoying.
I'm very impressed.
Like, oh, my God.
We're here all night. So, Will, Dave, I don't think you've actually seen Will play with us.
No.
But Will is an incredible musician. He's actually one of my favorite musicians on the planet. He's one of my favorite people on the planet.
You gotta stop telling people that.
No, no, man. It's the truth, though. I don't say that about many people. That's the thing. No, he really is. He's a phenomenal musician, and he joined NK Band maybe about a year ago after I did the record with the Butch Taylor and. Mm-hmm. I needed a keyboardist to do some of those things, and
yeah.
man, he plays that stuff better than Butch Taylor did, you know. So that's for sure. That's for sure. I said it on tape.
He's on record.
So, Will, let's talk about you. So, how did you get into music? I know you're from New Orleans. You grew up in a city, one of the best cities of music. How did it influence you? When did you start playing piano? How did you get into music?
Man, I got a toy keyboard for Christmas one year. It was 1989. I was two at the time, and I became my favorite toy ever.
Wow.
And thankfully, my parents saw this and did not say, oh, crap, let's put a quantum physics book in front of him right now. Just pretend like this never happened. Thankfully, they got me into lessons fairly early, and
like what, 4 or 5, something like that.
I think 5 or 6, yeah, 5 or 6, somewhere around there, and then started taking classical lessons at that age, and I was obsessed with everything that came on the radio, and that was usually dictated by, you know, what my parents were listening to in the car at the time, and
so give us some examples. What comes on that you're like, oh my God, what is that? I need to.
There was a lot of
right there,
and so yeah, I got immersed. You know, at a young age, I knew who Dr. John and Professor Longhair was, and you know, these days with Spotify, anybody can have that luxury. But back then, that was
a serious thing.
You had to be. In New Orleans or Mississippi or a similar town like that to really get exposed to that, or else you'd have to go to extensive lengths, which I was not willing to do at age, you know, 7.
Right, yeah. Of course. Well, it's pretty incredible that, like, most people, like, I just got into Professor Longhair maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And you have to know New Orleans musicians to really kind of be introduced to him. Like, most people have heard of Dr. John, but Professor Longhair, he was not like this huge superstar. You know, outside of New Orleans.
Either you know him or you don't.
Yeah,
he's definitely
and
one of those.
He is such a badass. Like, dude, what a staple of music from
absolutely.
That city.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's the real deal. He's really planted a lot of the roots in a lot of modern rock as we know today. And man, he's just such a good, he was such a good musician. It was like scary.
Yeah, those guys are like mad scientists. You're kind of like that too, man.
Nah.
You're definitely a badass. You're definitely
badass. They make my life a lot easier, I'll say that.
So you were using some of those elements like in your own playing? Like you were like, I want to do that kind of bag?
Yeah, I mean, well, I got really into that. And then, you know, I'm the kind of person, I get bored in one scene for too long. And I got into jazz a little later. And then, you know, I moved to Nashville in 2005 and was doing a little bit of the country thing, and then moved to Los Angeles, and I just kind of went.
How was that trend? Let's talk about that transition real quick. Like
from New Orleans
to Nashville. Like
that was weird.
Yeah, let's talk about that because that's a serious transition.
I mean, you know, it's musically it's so different. You know, Nashville is a lot of country, but it's not only country. It's very eclectic music scene, and it's you know, I moved there, and I'm like, man, these people dress amazingly. That was the first thing I noticed. I'm like, geez, man, and the place is... Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and, you know, everywhere is closed on Sunday except Pancake Pantry, and, you know, it's a different culture thing. And, but, you know, musically, I definitely worked more as a professional in Nashville than I did in New Orleans, just strictly by age and necessity, because... You know, it is only so long that you can, you know, not have to support yourself doing that. You
right.
know? So, you know, I was working in Nashville as a musician, but then the L.A. thing was the bigger transition because out here it's like, man, there's so many scenes out here and they're all good.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's good out here. It's like, oh, you want to do this scene? All right. They have it out here. Oh, by the way, they have a bunch of really incredible musicians at that and this and this and this. And so that was the biggest transition. And I never really blended any of these. I just kind of was the country guy, and then I was the jazz guy, R&B guy. And, you know, there was parts that overlap, but for the most part, I kind of wore different hats. And only recently did I try to mix them and
right.
kind of have a similar voice that, you know, goes through as many as it can fit in. You know, and that was the hardest part. You know, so
finding your voice, like blending all the things that you love.
Yeah, it was really hard, and it's definitely very much a journey that you know, I don't think it's ever done. You know, it's definitely not done with me. That's for sure.
Right.
But you know, So that's been the biggest difference for me is.
And you came to LA to study, right? You did your master's at USC.
I came to LA. I told people that I wanted to be a film composer and a jazz musician. Deep inside, I think the translation was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do out here. And
you're like, this sounds good. I'll just go.
It could be this thing. It could be that.
I think people want to hear whatever. It was just kind of felt right or something. And then I studied with a guy named Alan Pasqua, who's pretty much my idol as far as being a keys player, because you know he would play the rock stuff and then he would play the hardcore jazz stuff, and they were both on the highest level. And he did some movies here and there and all that stuff, and I've always loved that because you know I have such a short attention span and I get bored so easily, so I can go wherever I want. And
It's also interesting because you grew up in like a major music scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
You studied in another music scene that was almost completely opposite of what you grew up with. And then you come to LA where it's like, let's mix all of it together and confuse you even more.
But did you find as you were trying on all those different hats and starting to wear two hats at once, which I love doing, by the way. Was there like a Venn diagram that started to emerge of like, here's where it overlaps and this is my voice?
I think so. I think so. That's really what I started playing with a lot of blues players, and I was like, man, I forgot how much I love this music and how a lot of people can relate to it. And then you start paying attention and noticing it everywhere, like in pop music, you know, insert artist there's some kind of blues influence somewhere. And I was like, man, that's when I get stoked. It's like, oh, well, listen to that blues thing that they did or whatever. And that's exactly what happened. And then I just kind of slowly but surely started to find stuff that I thought worked and kind of, you know, went for some risks. Definitely fell on my face a few times. It's cool to know the scene or know the situation where that's appropriate, by the way.
Right.
And, you know, when it's appropriate, that's where you learn all the stuff. But, yeah, that's definitely what happened. The diagram, as you put it.
Let's hear you play something, because man, this is like such a treat for me. Like, I've heard him play. Our listeners, including you, Dave.
Yo, you cannot.
You're gonna hump his leg, man. I'm telling you.
Let's hype
it's
it
good.
Up.
It's good.
Okay.
Nice.
It's the money. So, what are you gonna play for us first?
You know, I'm gonna start off with a tune. The record is a piano trio with piano, bass, and drums, but. I'm going to do a solo piano adaptation of a tune called Bywater, which is on the record, and
cool. Here it is.
All right.
Will Harrington. Thank you. shit. That was so good, man. Double applause. I got chills. Dude, you know what's so awesome about your playing? It's like a lot of players, like whenever they play, sometimes they'll get too heady or it'll be too much. You know, you're grinning because you know this.
That's the beauty of, I don't thank my parents enough, but that is the beauty of, you know, I'm not from a musical family in that I have musicians in the family, but they loved music, and I have to thank them for, like, not, like, necessarily, you know, instilling a sense of melody in me to where, like, I care about that, and it's like that. The time and place thing, you know, comes into play.
Yeah.
So, that's the cool part about growing up with non-musician parents, that you don't necessarily get all the nerdy stuff all at once. You just kind of, you find it out for yourself.
They're like, what is he playing?
You know? I'm going to play. Oh, gosh. No.
This is an atonal exploration.
The thing is, he can play that stuff, but it's like, I love that he chooses restraint. Like, it's just like, oh, man, you are such a serious cat because you can play, you can take cats out, like, so to speak. And it's like when you play something like that, it's not only, like, you know, this is one thing I noticed when we first started working together. It's like, it's one thing to hear him play, but it's also another thing to watch him play. It's like you're just kind of, you are a master of kind of knowing where to take it. And that's really, like, not something that is that every musician has. It's innate or it's just not there.
Yeah.
And
it's either organic or it's forced.
And that's what I love about your playing. It's like, man, it's, you got your meat and potatoes, you have your own voice, you got these cool voicings and what you're doing, but you're also, like, doing this soulful stuff with, like, New Orleans kinds of, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're doing that jazz, like, New Orleans style stuff that, man, it's just bitching, dude.
No, thank you so much, man.
So how did you come up with that composition for the record? Like, how did you, what made you think that this, I want to put this on the record?
You know, that one was interesting. I was in a different, definitely in a different headspace. I wrote that based on a tune I'd written a long time ago, and I just kind of took the first four bars and, I was like, you know, I haven't written any ballads lately. I'm just going to write a ballad. And, you know, I had a gig coming up at the Blue Whale. This is a couple years ago. And I was like, this will be cool. And we were playing with a guitar player at that time. And he took the melody. And, you know, it was pretty easy changes to blow over at the risk of turning this into a nerd conversation. But, you know, there was...
Dave loves that.
It's very...
He flies kites.
It's like you can kind of go very smoothly. There's a lot of, like, common elements between as the movement goes on. So, you know, it just kind of really worked. And the guys that I play with on the record... you know, it all sounded really great when we played together. I'm like, man, it's got to go on there. So, yeah, that was probably one of the. There were some tough ones on there, and there were some long takes, and there were some breezes, and that was definitely one of the easier ones.
I always marvel when a jazz artist goes in to make a record. It's like, man, you're going there to play the entire thing, essentially, just like right off the bat.
Yeah, oh my gosh, man. As many times, I mean, you know this, man. Yeah. It's like you go to the studio and you're playing for somebody else. It's, you know, it's nerve-wracking enough, you know, the first few times, but you do it enough and you work with that artist a bunch of times, you know, the pressure's off. But, man, when you're there, it's like, I remember being in there, and it's like, hey, when are we going to take a break? And I'm like, wait. Oh, that's up to me. Oh, gosh. Like, oh, man, the music stopped because I'm not playing right now. Oh, hey, does that sound good? Okay, wait, you're asking me? Oh, wait. This could sound like total garbage, and I could just let it go, and nobody's going to do it.
And it's, whenever it's your own stuff, too, it's like you're extra hard on yourself, too.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
I mean? So, like, you're like, this has to be a certain way. This has to sound like you. You know what I mean? And it's like, you're like, is it enough of this? Is it enough of that? Or... you know, you're kind of beating yourself to the ground. Like, that's part of the process, too. And then it's really nice when you get to that point where you're like, that was the one. I want that. That's the take, or that's the cut.
That's the thing that I want this to say.
And I'm actually most excited to segue into a cut on your record, because awesome. I've heard a couple little cuts of this, and, man, It is some mean shit. Like, seriously, it is so good. It is so good.
Thank you so much.
So, what's the name of this song? Why don't you set it up?
This one's called The Chief Speaks.
All right, you got it? Damn it, Dave. You're wasting time. Push play. It should be on the computer. Do you see it on the computer?
Right here.
You see it? Is it on there? It should be on there.
I got it.
Okay, perfect.
Here we go. The Jeeves speaks.
am. Woo! Dude, not only did I get chills, but I was like hooting and hollering, dude. Man, some of those licks, dude. That's some serious shit. Dude, I don't even know. I'm speechless, man. Like,
oh gosh,
like that's no, so it's nice. That's not easy to do. Like, man, that was insane, dude. That was so good.
Thank you so much, man.
And there's so many rhythmic nuances. That's what I love about your playing. Yeah, it's like
there's so much.
You hear it. You hear it in the head, the jazz head.
Yeah,
and then you hear it in the soloing, and then when he comes back. He almost exaggerates like mm-hmm. what you're doing rhythmically. It's mm-hmm. fucking bad. Yeah, it's so bad.
I was definitely taking a couple pages from Professor Longhair's book on that one.
You know what it sounds, dude? It sounds like Professor Longhair, what's his name? Dr. John and Herbie Hancock uh-huh. had a love child, and and Thelonious Monk sprinkled a little love magic on them. Oh, seriously, you know the funny thing is, it's like you know, like jazz right now. It just doesn't have the same thing that it did like 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Yeah. And it's like a lot of it is like the way I feel about it. It's like I still love jazz, but there's so many players that are just not saying anything. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And it's so refreshing yeah. to hear. Like I knew when I heard like somebody was like, you got to hear this track that Will's, you know, doing on his record. Mm-hmm. And I heard it and I was like, God, it wasn't a surprise. It was like fascinating how brilliant the voicings were in the song, what you're saying, how you express it, and the take. It's like, dude, that's the way the old guys did it. You know what I mean?
It's really funny about that tune too. I debated like ever telling anybody this or just like, you know,
taking this
to the grave. But you know, as far like speaking about the writing of the tune. I sat on that first like phrase and I was like, all right, this could be something I'll just come back to it later. For me, that never works because it's still there and the writer's block is still there. I have to like either power through it or just convince myself that it was terrible and move on. And I remember, I was going to pick up a girl, we were going out to dinner and this thing was like eating at me. I was just like, man, I can't, like, why can't I figure this out? Are you kidding me? Like, I went to school, like, what, isn't that enough? Like, all that stuff. Come on, that's enough, right? That's enough. And I'm like, man, I just can't figure this out. I pick her up, and I put in some Professor Longhair, and it was, you know, she was talking over the music.
And you're not even paying attention to
her. Well, I'm not going to say that.
Let's be honest.
I'm not going to say that. Well, enough time's passed. There's no way she's listening. But even if she will.
She's like, oh, my God.
She's like, I'm going there right now.
We have a caller.
No, but it was those same four bars. And then she said something. And I heard the track was Big Chief and one of Professor Longhair's most famous tunes. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. And I said, hold on one second. I got out my phone. I pulled over, and I hummed it into the thing, my phone, so I wouldn't forget it. And I was just like, this is the first time we've
ever
hung out.
She's like, this is over.
Well, I never saw her again, for sure.
But you're like, that's okay. This song's going to outlive you too, honey. Gosh,
but yeah, that was a lot of fun playing out with them.
And dude, and who's playing bass and drums?
It was really well arranged.
That's like, my buddy John Richards on bass and Andrew Boyle on drums. I went to school with them. I met them on like the first or second day I was at SC, and we all got paired up in the same ensemble. And
just chemistry.
Yeah, and at first it just started off, okay, we're playing together because, you know, we have to play together. But, you know, as I started writing tunes and John started writing tunes and Andrew started bringing in stuff, I'm like, man, they totally get it. And they're the kind of dudes where you don't really have to tell them, like, what to do. It's like they just kind of get it.
Yeah.
And so it's just been really easy. And I know we're looking forward to the show because we haven't played any original stuff in a long time, you know.
Well, let's talk about the show. Tell us when this is your CD release, correct?
Yeah, it's on April 2nd at Rockwell Table and Stage. The address is 1714 North Vermont or something along that line.
You should know this stuff.
Yeah, I know it's a number.
You can look it up. We can all look it up.
But yeah, Rockwell Table and Stage is great. They got a great Yamaha grand piano, and it's a beautiful venue. And
one more time, what's the date and time?
April 2nd, 8 p.m.
All right. And how long are you playing?
I think we're going to do like an hour five, something like that. We meet up tomorrow. We're going to time the set tomorrow, and I'll know for sure then. But I don't want it to be much longer than that. I want to keep it to that.
You know, there's not a lot of jazz artists that I'm like – there's a lot of great jazz artists in the city. But there's a difference between a lot of jazz artists in the city and a lot of jazz artists I personally am excited to hear play. Because there's a lot of, like, you know, musical masturbation going on. Like,
oh, man.
You know, it's just like so many guys are just, oh, I can play. Yeah. Here, I'm going to shove so many notes down your throat right now because mm-hmm. this is how I play.
Yeah.
And that doesn't move me. It's like, what I love about your approach is you can burn all those players to the ground. And you don't have to prove it. It's like you are about the song. And that's what I love about your compositions. That's what I first heard about it. I was like, dude, this guy's a songwriter. He's like into the composition. You're into the movement of changes or what's going on in the song and how things make you feel. And then when you're like ready to let loose, that's when you do. Mm-hmm. And it's you hear it
when
on
the song
track.
Gives space yeah. to feel that way. You feel it that
but
way.
Most, absolutely. Most people, you're not cramming, but there's you're so not many times. I mean, I know you, yeah. I know all three of us can vouch for this. There were so many times where he could have yeah. let loose yeah. and he didn't.
Yeah.
And then when he did, it was like, oh my God. It was like, it was a total seduction, you mm-hmm. know, like
yeah.
an aural, A-U-R-A-L seduction.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that guy.
You are.
As a pianist.
Easy there, Tiger.
As a keyboard player, in your experience.
There you go.
Has every good boy done fine?
You know, I don't know. I definitely wouldn't consider myself a good boy sometimes. I don't know if I've done fine either.
I was not expecting that question.
Would anyone?
I would expect that from Nikki.
I did it with a straight face. Congrats,
yeah.
dude.
I can tell. But seriously, folks, I was curious for the listener. You are wearing a Nirvana shirt.
Oh gosh, don't tell him.
But between Bleach and Nevermind, I believe
sale at
this
Target.
Is when this happened.
No, Nirvana's the shit, dude.
As a nerve nerd myself. What have you taken? Because as a keyboardist appreciating music that has no keyboard and that is itself very kind of sparse.
First of all, that's a testament to how badass of a person he is.
Yeah.
No, it's the truth. Seriously, like no jazz musician I know would ever have that shirt on, mm-hmm. and it's so awesome that you're wearing a Nirvana shirt because I love Nirvana.
They just haven't found the bargain shelf at Target.
You're like Nirvana's cool, right?
I used to love Nirvana when I was like in 7th or 8th grade, and I had that phase for sure. I mean, that's like, it was like Nirvana. My first record that I ever bought was Matchbox 20, Yourself or Someone Like You. And I think that was one of the cool things. And it's not to say that you can't be from a musical family that exposes you to a lot of pop music, because that mm-hmm. you can absolutely do that. But in the jazz world, if you were in a jazz family, something that I've noticed from people I've worked with, a lot of times they're talking about, like, when they're like 6 or 7, their dad's showing them, you know, like Tony Williams' Lifetime. Right. That's a great, that is like
right.
awesome.
Yeah.
But I remember going to a party, going away party when I was in high school, and it was for me and the other accompanists at church. And family at church was nice enough to put it on for us. And of course, we're both pianists, so we played something. And he sits down and he plays Donna Lee.
Right.
Like I said, a time and a place for that. And that's not to say that people are too dumb to appreciate Donna Lee. The audience is way smarter than anybody gives them credit for. But I played Tiny Dancer.
Right.
And he didn't even know that song. And
you're like, you get out of here.
And I feel like, and is this just my opinion, but I do feel like you miss out on a lot if you're into jazz. That's okay. Jazz is beautiful.
Jazz is beautiful. Yeah. Jazz
it's
is beautiful.
Great.
I love jazz.
But, you know, like, you ask a random person off the street who Keith Jarrett is, as much of a genius as he is, and probably one of my top five favorite pianists ever.
Me too.
You know, a lot of people won't know who he is, and if they do, I highly doubt that the average person is going to be able to, you know, list their favorite record by Keith Jarrett. It's just not going to happen. And I feel like if you have that disconnect from the general public, I think you're missing out on a lot of stuff. And so that was one thing that I didn't have to worry about when I was younger. And so
you had that exposure. You know, well, let's talk about that real quick. So you have some surprising influences, just talking about Nirvana. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other, like, okay, let's talk about jazz influences or keyboard. You said Professor Longhair. You said Dr. John. Who are some of the other influences or influences that would surprise any listener out there?
Surprise? I'm not sure, but my influences at the moment, the ones that come quickly to mind, would be of course Dr. John, Professor Longhair. James Booker is a big one. Bill Evans is a huge one at the moment.
And
Keith Jarrett, as we said, and then a lot of session players from the 90s who I didn't know who they were until very recently. One guy in particular named Matt Rawlings, who was out here. I just saw him play at Hotel a few months ago. And he doesn't play out live at, you know, clubs like Hotel very often. To my knowledge, he's doing the film composing thing at the moment and doing really well at it. But in the 90s, he was on pretty much every A-list country session. And he was one of those dudes, it's like, if you hear really awesome piano on a country track, it's probably him or Don Gralnick or, you know, even Bruce Hornsby has done a lot of really, really pop, you know. One thing that comes to mind is Bonnie Raitt, I Can't Make You Love Me. That's Bruce Hornsby on that record.
Yeah,
one of my favorite piano tracks ever. And, you know, but I saw Matt Rawlings play, and, you know, he's definitely, in many ways, man, like, you know, as a side man, I draw from those guys more than a lot of the, you know, conscious influences,
yeah,
like
course.
Bill Evans.
Right.
And, it, you know, and I some guy came up to me the other day and said, hey, man, you kind of remind me of Don Gralnick. And at first I was like,
what?
Yeah, it was because I knew who he was.
Yeah,
I knew who he was, but he's one of those guys, he's played on so much stuff. It's like you don't know everything he's played on. You just kind of assume that he's played on everything because he was such a heady, like, session guy. But I knew him also as a jazz pianist because he's done a few solo records. And I checked out something. I'm like, yeah, man, I don't see it. And then I looked up his Wikipedia. And one of the songs that was my mom's favorite song when I was a kid was Don't Know Much by mm-hmm. Linda Ronstadt and Aaron Neville. Mm-hmm. And it's Don Gralnick on that piano track.
You're like, of course.
And I listened to that track, and I'm like, man, I steal from this dude so much. And I didn't even know it was
We
Don
have
Gralnick.
A caller.
I didn't even know it was Don Gralnick.
Yeah. We had some things to talk about.
It's all clicking together.
Yeah, well, it's all connected, you know. And, like, you know, the funny thing is, it's like, the one thing that I think is remarkable about your record and you taking this big step of just, like, putting your voice down, it's like Chuck LaVelle is, like, one of my favorite session guys, like, from the 70s, all the Allman Brothers stuff, mm-hmm. Rolling Stones. I mean, you name it, he played with them, you know? And his solo stuff, like, I listen to it, and I'm, like, not moved in the same way that those other things mm-hmm. move me when I hear his solos on those songs.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
And it's so weird because, like, the difference between, I think, a good artist and a great artist is, like, when you play with NK Band, like, when he came in for his first rehearsal, like, first of all, he's the youngest in the band, right? And he came in, he's like, oh, guys, I didn't have time to learn all this. And we just start playing, and everybody's just, like, turning their heads, like, who the hell is this kid? This kid is burning.
I wish I would have known that at the time, because I was like, this, I'm not ready for this town. Like, it's like, oh, older dude. Yeah, I know why they're working, because they don't, yeah, they're
dude,
not messing around.
Dude, but you know what was so awesome? It's like, you left the room, and then, like, one by one, the guys were like, dude, that guy's the shit, man. He better play more than just one or two shows.
Oh,
and
man,
one of the influences that actually surprised me, that when we played Sundance, I think, 2 years ago together, and you said the Eagles were, like, one of your favorite bands of all time. And I would never have expected a jazz, funk-influenced, you know, artist to say the Eagles is one of their favorite bands. So, like, that, for me, I was like, this guy loves songs, and I just respect that so much.
Dude, the Eagles are sick.
They are so bad. They're
my
so bad.
My God. They're so good, it hurts. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, man. Like, the singing, the playing, the writing, like,
and I actually went
scary.
And saw them play live because you said that, you know? And
man,
I'd always loved them, you know? Yeah. I've always loved their songs. But when he said that, I'm like, I need to see, like, there's so many hit songs. Mm-hmm. I saw the History of the Eagles, Volume 1. I don't know if you've seen that.
That's
killing.
The best.
It's killing. So I went and saw it, and I came back, and I texted you afterwards. I was like, dude, I saw the Eagles because of you, and dude, they were insanely tight. It was incredible. But like, that's what I love about you is like, you really love music. It's not just jazz music or classical, or and I felt the same way. Like what you were talking about with jazz, with classical music. I came from classical music, so everybody was just like, you just need to listen to this. Don't worry about any of the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And when you just see that scope, and then you see the breath of fresh air that all music can bring, it's like, man, you're doing it, and you're doing it well, man. Let's have you play another song. What are you going to play us this time?
You know, I'm going to play... I've been working on a lot of short pieces lately. Half of that is because I think it's justifiable, given the attention span of most people in 2015, myself included, but also because I am... Maybe I think I got sick of developing ideas, and I just like, just let it go.
That's far enough.
Okay, that's enough for now.
So what's this called?
This is called Cathedral.
All right, let's hear it. Dude,
nice.
Amazing. Amazing. So real quick, where can people find you? What are all your social media or websites?
My Twitter is WP Harrington. That's Harrington with an E.
And spell it all. Spell it all.
Okay, WPHERRINGTON. And my SoundCloud is soundcloud.com/WPHmusic-1. That's,
and one more time, where are you playing? And talk about your CD release.
Rockwell, April 2nd, 8 p.m.
That's in Los Angeles, in Los Feliz.
In Los Feliz, yeah.
All right. We're going to end the show real quick with a little NK Band tune. This is one of the songs. I actually, when Will did one of his first shows with us at House of Blues, I was like, man, just you and I. Just you and I are going to play this live.
Just the two of us.
We're going to play a song called Silent Tears. This one's for Zane Musa. It's called Silent Tears.
Great.
Some people own the world, all for nothing, and we can destroy each other. Sunshine after the rain.
On behalf of Will Harrington, Dave Jensen, and I'm Nikhil Karula, we'll see you next week. Thank you very much.